Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Go! The ball is out. Ball's the Bengals out. Have scooped ball's it up. Out. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, yeah. 20, yeah. 10, yeah. 5. Touchdown!
Toward the end zone. It is knocked up in the air. Oh, AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
It's about to get rowdy here. But if you want to fight, get out of here. We're about to tear up.
Welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I am your Bengals beat writer, Paul Daner Jr. Excited. I'm excited. You should be excited. I think we all, general excitement should be the feeling because it is that time. It is time for the Scribe Session Cincinnati Inquirer NFL Draft Spectacular. It's a bit of a working title, but I think you know what I mean. The NFL Draft Spectacular, where I kind of call around to a few people who are the top of the field, the absolute experts of experts, and try to find out where some of the prospects that the Bengals will be looking at, particularly towards the top of the draft, then we'll even go deep into the late round fits, how certain players would fit into the Bengals scheme, who they should be looking at, what some of their strengths are, and what you should be hoping for as a fan come April 30th. Once the Bengals start going through their 9 selections that they have in this year's draft, I got quite a lineup for you this year. I'm not going to lie. These people are very intelligent, and I'm just trying to keep up because I've got Doug Farrar, who is an NFL writer for Sports Illustrated. He's the host of the Chalk Talk podcast, which they're currently doing a draft series with him and Greg Cosell going through every position, and it's fascinating. I've listened to a number of them. He does an unbelievable job, as analytical as they come, a great understanding. I'm sure that you've read him in Sports Illustrated before, but I mean you can't get more in depth. Great conversation. He runs through first round offensive linemen with me. He talks about some of the second round wide receivers positions that I think you're definitely going to see the Bengals looking at, and even mentions a player in this draft that he thinks is a Geno Atkins clone, and I think a name that fans should be very familiar with as they start maneuvering through the mid to late rounds of this draft. My second guest on the podcast as I go around is Dane Brugler, who's the senior NFL draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout and CBS Sports. I got to tell you, the NFL draft guide that Dane puts out every year is unbelievable. And if you want to know the ins and outs of every player that is selected, not just in the first round, but those late rounds when you're half asleep on the couch, you don't even know why you still have the draft on. ESPN has downgraded to the D team hosting at this point. You see those guys drafted, and then you just flip through his 187 pages of player breakdowns and find as much information as you could possibly imagine on the 6th round pick that the Bengals took, or that the Steelers or Ravens, if you want anybody in the division. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, have him on. He's fantastic talking about some guys that he's not as high on in the wide receiver group. A little more insight on the offensive linemen. He has some great information going back around on some of the later round tight ends, which is going to be a huge topic of discussion for the Bengals, as that is a position. Really, I feel like they've done about everything you can do thus far this offseason to help fill their holes except tight end. Tight end has been left wide open. And so it's going to be incredibly important for them to find somebody, particularly in the blocking tight end mold, to complement Tyler Eifert. So I talked to Dane a little bit about who those guys could be. And one of them with a local tie that I think is a perfect fit for the Bengals. I close it out, last but absolutely not least, with a guy who's become a real titan in the draft business before he was already a titan in the executive business. He's Phil Savage, who's executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. You've seen him on ESPN Insiders. He's on Sirius XM. He also does Alabama radio. He is former NFL general manager with the Browns back in the day, player personnel director. He was a coach. He was a scout. I mean, he had 20 years in the NFL. He was actually the director of player personnel and then eventually college scouting. He did both of those with the Ravens back in the day and helped build Marvin Lewis's defense with the Ravens. So he's very familiar with Marvin, the type of player he's looking for. And so I talked to him. We delve a little bit into a player that he's super familiar with. Great nuggets on Landon Collins, the first-round safety out of Alabama, who is absolutely on the Bengals' radar right now. Even though I think, personally, they're going to go offensive line, I think Collins is a guy that could absolutely tempt them if he was sitting there at 21. We talk a little bit about his analysis. A guy at the road in Quentin Rollins. And we'll delve into some of the 4-3 defensive tackles that could possibly fit as the Bengals try to figure that out. Real quick, I mean, this is obviously, as you can tell, me babbling to myself and to you, the listener. We appreciate you for listening. We'll get right to these guys momentarily. I want to give you a little bit of background to where I'm at with this draft and also some news. I got good news. We have excellent news. You will not have to listen to me babble to myself again in the near future because starting on the 20th of this month, April 20th, I will no longer be alone as your Bengals beat writer. And there was much rejoicing. Yay. Super excited to tell you guys that Jim Osarski is going to be joining me as a 1-2 punch on this beat. Jim is an incredible writer, reporter, multimedia guy. He's coming to us from Milwaukee, working for onmilwaukee.com up there. He spent time in Chicago working for the Tribune papers. He has covered the Packers, the Bucks, I mean, pretty much every professional sport up there in Milwaukee, and is just going to be an incredible addition to the team. I cannot wait to get him on here, and you'll start seeing some of the stuff that we can do as we add the second body for the full-time year-round. It's going to really do a lot for the coverage. We're going to be able to bring more to you, more in-depth stuff, more long-form stuff, and, of course, much more of all the regular everyday coverage that you come to expect. And I'll take a couple days off. I might get a couple days off. You might give me those. So I'm excited about that. Real quick, where we're at with the mock draft. The 3.0 will be coming out in a couple of weeks. You'll have that, I believe it's going to be on the 15th. We're plotting around mid-month, so you'll have that come out very soon. The last one, 2.0, came out, and I had a switch across the top because after free agency, some needs changed, and I think what you're seeing now is free agency needs filled at in front of the Bengals have sort of opened up a couple of teams that I thought would pass on offensive line that now will probably fill that because they filled other needs, particularly some receivers. Kansas City getting Jeremy Maclin. I think it opens up now where Cleveland has a pretty good chance to get Devontae Parker at 12, which will probably push them into one of the offensive linemen at 19 maybe. So I don't think, moral of that story, I don't think Lael Collins of LSU, who
is, in my opinion, the number one left tackle prospect and the guy that would be a nice fit for the Bengals. I just don't see him still being there at 21. Anything's possible. I mean, heck, this time last year, no one was saying Darquez Dennard will be available at number 24, and yet there he was floating all the way to the Bengals. So I don't think Collins comes back anymore, which means, okay, what's after that? And right now I have Miami's Eric Flowers, who is just a mean Gus on the field. I mean, just absolutely gets after it. He projects probably more as a right tackle, but you can definitely see him switching over to left after they work with him, and absolutely could step in as your number one backup at guard in case there were injuries there to Kevin Zeitler or Clint Bowling. So that's where I've got there, and that's my second round pick. I still have Philip Dorsett, but spoiler alert, that's probably going to change. I just don't see him making it to 53. You never know how it's going to fall, and if teams are going to be wary of his size and some of his struggles he's had in blocking. I just think his speed is just too much, and what he did at his pro day, just posting a 4.24 or 4.27, depending on which scout's stopwatch you looked at, it's just ill, and it shows up on tape too. I just don't see him floating anymore, which opens up a lot of different options and what will happen there in that second round. I think that's the most wide open pick there is. So we'll see what happens when I bring that projection out for you. And of course, April 30th through May 2nd is the draft. We'll have all your coverage at Cincinnati.com. And we're going to have, don't forget, Beyond the Stripes. We're going to have a draft show this year. This will be very exciting. More details coming up on that. So keep an eye on Cincinnati.com for all of our information and all that. But I don't want to hold you up anymore, so you have to listen to me talking to myself. Let's go ahead and hit it. I'm going to run those three guys for you, and I'll show up after all they're done talking in about 50 minutes. And we can finish it all out then. So here you go. Let's kick it off with Doug Farrar, Sports Illustrated.
All right, first up on our NFL Draft Spectacular, I want to welcome in Doug Farrar from Sports Illustrated, also host of the Chalk Talk podcast, which has been on the draft series with Greg Cosell, which has just been an unbelievable listen. If you haven't heard it yet, if you're looking for really in-depth knowledge of really everybody that's coming out in this draft class, it's been fantastic. Doug, thanks for joining me.
Well, cool. Thanks for the plug. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I've been really enjoying all the conversation with you and Greg. And one of the recent pods that you put up was on offensive linemen. And mm-hmm. lo and behold, about 3 minutes in, you're talking about Andrew Whitworth. who's a bit of a model for a important conversation that people are having with themselves with this draft, which is they're looking at all of these guys who are the sizes of guards and right tackles and asking themselves, can they play left tackle? And you point to Andrew Whitworth, who's done an unbelievable job as a pass protector, but he's not what the typical left tackle looks like. Has it been kind of interesting to see how there seems to be so many of these tackles, particularly on the back end of the first round, that fit into that Whitworth mold?
Yeah, and it's something that Greg and I talked about. It's something I wrote about on SI.com last week. Whitworth gave up, I'm trying to look here, per Football Focus, yeah, he gave up 9 total pressures all year. No sacks, 1 hit, 8 hurries. And this is a guy who, and I'm sure he'd admit it, he was a guard for a long time, and he kind of looks like a guard. He's got short arms. He's a bit stubby. He's not, tremendously athletic in space. He's developed a kick step. I don't think he has any. He's no one's going to mistake him for Joe Thomas. And I think Whitworth is a bit of an outlier as far as his athletic ability and how he's transferred it to the left tackle position, the blind side protector position, through his intensity and his knowledge of angles and his understanding of leverage as much as anything else. He's a very smart guy. He's a technician, and he's managed to overcome his lack of athletic attributes in a certain regard. I don't know that you want to say to yourself as an NFL team, we're going to get the next Andrew Whitworth, because I don't know if that guy's out there.
Right.
I think the closest guy in this draft class is Brandon Scherff, the kid from Iowa, who I think can be a left tackle. Some are projecting him as guard. I think he's a better left tackle because he's a bit taller, a bit longer. I think he does. His kick step is, you know, it's more of a, you know, it's like when you're trying to parallel park and you don't quite know how. That's how he does it. But he's very powerful. He's good at the second level. You know, I think he has a technique. And then Lael Collins from LSU, on the other hand, you know, he tends to lunge. He's got shorter arms. And you know, that arm length thing is a big deal. I think a guy like Lael Collins would be better as maybe a right tackle, but definitely as a left guard, because he's better in a phone booth. And, you know, that. So to say there's an Andrew Whitworth type, I don't think there really is. The point Greg and I were making is you don't have to look like a left tackle or play like one, but if you don't look like one and if you don't hit all the – if you don't check all the boxes, you had better be ridiculously technique sound.
Right, right. And it's is there – you look at a team like the Bengals, and there is this focus, particularly now under Hugh Jackson, on powerful – running game type offensive linemen in general. I mean, do you see guys in this class that maybe project better to that model of offensive linemen, particularly speaking just about the first round with these guys when you run through guys like Dale Collins, Eric Flowers, Clemmings is a big guy like that. Do you see like there seems to be a fit in guys that would be probably their strength would be in the running game, which would be something the Bengals would be, you know, obviously very interested in.
Well, and if Lael Collins is there at what, Bengals have 21st overall pick?
21, yep.
Yeah, if Lael Collins was there at 21, that wouldn't really surprise me, because the Bengals don't seem to mind having a guy at left tackle who doesn't look like a left tackle per se and can also kick inside the guard. That's the Whitworth model, and I think Lael Collins could do both. You know, Eric Flowers from Miami is a first-round projection. He's a guy who really – he would concern me. If I was a GM, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole, because he gets away – he's such a powerful guy that he gets away with a lot of really atrocious technique. His feet are awful. He has no kick slide at all. He doesn't use his hands well, but he can stand there. I mean, he can just stand there and be big. You can get away with that in college. You cannot get away with it in the NFL. He's going to get, especially guys with quick inside counters, he's just going to get abused. The other guy, TJ Clemmings, you mentioned, I actually, when we did our write-ups for the SI64 and for the top 300 draft prospects is coming out later this month, that took a lot of work. I compare TJ Clemmings to Tyron Smith of the Cowboys, because Tyron Smith at USC played right tackle. He had limited experience. And he came into the NFL, and he had all the physical tools to dominate. Now, T.J. Clemmings was a defensive end for his first 3 years at Pitt. He was a basketball guy. Switched to right tackle his last 2 years at Pitt. And I think if you – and I know Whitworth and Andre Smith were both in their last years of their contracts, and Andre Smith had some injury issues. I think T.J. Clemmings is a plug-and-play guy as a right tackle, and I think over time could be the best left tackle in this draft class, because he's got – the speed, the agility, the power of the second level. He's going to be a developmental guy as a left tackle. But I think as far as the pure, raw physical tools, I don't think there's a better prospective left tackle in this class. He, to me, is a guy you really want to look at as, you know, that's sort of the guy you're looking for.
Yeah. That would seem to be a fit at where a guy like Clemmings would probably look at a landing spot like Cincinnati and say, boy, that's ideal. I don't have to come in and start day one. It gives me a year to really kind of hone the skills and develop a little bit more. Maybe you have to go in there if injuries happen or whatever, but for the most part, you can come in and not have that pressure to have to come in and play on the edge day one. And if an injury happened on the interior, you could step in there and play at guard as well and really be a fill-in. I mean, it seems like that would be a situation where it would kind of behoove both sides to kind of have a marriage there.
I think so. And later in the draft, if you're looking at, you know, second to fourth round, I think Darrell Williams from Oklahoma, natural right tackle, that's where he played, very, very powerful guy. If they're looking for an Andre Smith replacement, he would be ideal. And Rob Havenstein from Wisconsin, typical Wisconsin player, mid-round guy, not tremendously athletic, but great technique.
Yeah. You know, the Bengals needing – they're definitely going to have to fill offensive line somewhere in the first couple of rounds. So, it seems to me when you look at the needs and really the fact that they haven't filled much depth on their offensive line outside of bringing back Eric Winston behind the returning starting five that they're going to need to go there and with the contract situation, probably going to be one of the guys that we just discussed as far
well,
as
well, and when you invest a serious amount of money in a quarterback who is notoriously bulky under pressure, you'd better get that right.
Yeah, and it's been the one thing that they have been able to say that they've done right is they've done a good job of avoiding him having to deal with pressure, whether it's getting the ball out fast. As he was second in the league in quarterback to snap to throw timing last year, and you know really just keeping a solid line in front of him. They went and spent this year in bringing back Clint Bowling, Kevin Zeitler, of course, a first-round pick, and he will probably be looking extensive in the near future. So they're set there. The other interesting thing that happens is just part of where the Bengals are at right now is every one of their top three receivers is in the last year of their contract, one of them being one of the best in the game in A.J. Green, Marvin mm-hmm. Jones coming back, Mohamed Sanu, who is better in the slot and really faded last year, led the league in drops. It's a position
pretty good
that
he's a pretty good deep ball thrower, though.
He is. He may be the best. He may be the best deep ball thrower on this team. It's certainly been argued before. That's for sure.
Yes.
Let's say this about the receiver position is they need a guy that can play in the slot, and they're going to need it into the future. Now, there's a number of guys when you look at the depth of this draft, as well as last year's, is really a good thing for teams that need a receiver and are willing to wait the second round because there's some high quality that they could find there where the Bengals select at 53. I want to run a few guys by you and dispel concerns that I think you would have as to what – and really the reasons why they're not in the first round. Or maybe they will be. Who knows? The first being Philip Dorsett. I think, mm-hmm. obviously, the speed jumps off the film. It jumps off the stopwatch. There's no denying what he can be. The concern with him is with blocking, and maybe people question his ability to catch. What do you see as the biggest concerns as to why Dorsett more than likely will be there in the second round?
Well, size is a lot of it is just market forces will dictate. And this is, I would argue that it may not be as deep as last year's, but in Amari Cooper and Kevin White, you have two guys at top who may be better. I mean, last year it was Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans who were sort of the consensus 1-2. I think Amari Cooper and Kevin White, especially Kevin White, who I think could be the next Larry Fitzgerald, you've got two better guys on top. I think both of those guys are going to go top 10. So, if it were a really weak class, Philip Dorsett might go in the bottom of the first round. So a lot of the, second round projection, which I agree with, in this particular receiver class, where top down it's really, really strong, depending on how you feel about a wrist like a Dorial Green-Beckham. So in that case, the thing about Dorsett, 5'10", 185. So if you try and get him to bulk up, you take away his speed, and then he's just a guy. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'll say about Dorsett, and I've talked to people in the league about him, there is a lot of regard for his ability to run routes, to put his foot in the ground and gain separation. And the comparison I've heard most of all, and I agree with, is T.Y. Hilton.
Yep.
And I would argue that as a slot – and here's the thing. Slot receiver used to be a pejorative deal, but you've got guys – Jordan Matthews for the Eagles last year, he was tremendously productive in the slot. Randall Cobb just got a $40-something million contract. He has caught 12 touchdowns in the slot, and he mm-hmm. caught 12 touchdowns total. So that productive receiver, you look at the Giants with Victor Cruz. You look at what a bunch of teams have tried and failed to do with Percy Harvin. People are looking for slot weapons. And Dorsett, he can run the dig. He can run the slant. He can run the deep seam route that a guy like Drew Brees has been doing for years. I know the Bengals would like that in their paradigm, and I think Dorsett would be perfect for that. He's not going to get bigger. That's the thing, and that's why he's going to drop. He's 5'10", 185. And if you give him an extra biscuit and make him slower, you're just stupid. You take him for what he is. You put him in the slot. And the thing about slot receivers, everyone, oh, he's 5'10", 180, so he can play in the slot. That's not really, you know, it's not just automatically smaller guy slot receiver. You have to understand short and intermediate area spacing because a lot of the time you're facing off coverage. And you're running a lot of, you know, skinny slants and quick goes. And a lot of times you're going to be thrown into contact. And honestly, that's a negative on Dalton. It has been his whole career. So he'll throw guys into graveyard situations.
Right.
Dorsett, I think, has the physicality to bounce up from that, whereas like a Tyler Lockett from Kansas State, I don't like him as a physical receiver at all. He's fast and he's smaller, but I don't project him as an optimal slot receiver, whereas Philip Dorsett, I think, really can be.
Yeah. It's you mentioned Lockett. He seems to do a lot of the things that you want. He was super productive. A lot of guys are really, really high on him. But there's, you know, outside of the size, what are the biggest things that concern you about Lockett? Because he could be a guy when you consider size and need. And Hugh Jackson's come out and said, I don't need tall guys anymore. I have three of those guys. I need fast, take the top off type of guys. Does Lockett not fit that mold as much?
Well, he can take the top off, but what I noticed with him, and maybe it's correctable, he tended to shy away from contact. He gets, I mean, right the moment you tackle him, he gets nuked.
Mm-hmm.
He's just done. And there were times when he had what I call Todd Pinkston disease, where he did not want to catch balls in traffic. And
yeah.
You're talking about, you're coming into the AFC North, you've got adverse situations on defense automatically, plus you've got weather issues. I mean, you have to be tough, as you well know, to play in that division. Lockett, to me, I think he could wind up as a return guy and not much else. I think he might get overdrafted and wind up as a special teamer. Now, again, that, you know, I think there are things you can coach. I think an aversion to the physical nature of the game, I'm not sure that can be coached. I think that's just something you hopefully do not have or unfortunately do have, and it was something I saw far too often on tape with him.
Yeah. Devin Smith, a guy who you talk about take the top off. I mean, you know, obviously no one debates his ability to run after and track the deep ball. But the question with him is what about the rest of his game? If you're going to have to run underneath and develop that. Do you see the ability for that to happen?
Yeah, and I think, you know, people talk about money ball and market efficiency, and I think one of the things teams are smart at doing is taking receivers from sort of underfunded, so to speak, passing games or unsophisticated passing games and saying, okay, these specific skills are transferable. I think he would be a great fit in the Hugh Jackson offense. He's a little bit bigger, but he's a total burner. And you mentioned he tracks a deep ball very well. He's a good after-catch guy. If they're looking for, and he's a guy who can play the slot and outside. If they run, you know, like a trips or a bunch to one side, I don't think they're a heavy trip/bunch team from the film I've studied. But, you know, if you put him on like a twins right with A.J. Green and he's the second guy, you create some matchup issues because here's, you know, A.J. Green's covered by one guy, the other guy's looking at him, and Devin Smith, if you take your eyes off him, you know, bang, you got a 40-yard seam route right up, just boom. So I would like him a lot in a Hugh Jackson offense.
Yeah, I think the Bengals like him a lot too, and, you know, there's always – you never know, especially when you start getting into this level and so many guys and teams have certain people they pluck, and you never know who's a little higher on somebody, and somebody you thought would be there at 53 gets snatched up at 45 or where – it's really hard to project, but I think a lot of the guys we just mentioned are guys that certainly will be in the category. I know one guy that you've talked about. I want to talk about a guy who you think is very similar to number 97 for the Bengals, and that's Clemson's Grady Jarrett. Did that just pop out at you immediately when you saw him?
Well, I was assigned him for the SI position rankings, and I hadn't seen a lot of him. But, well, let's see. He was 6'1", 304 at the combine, ran a 4.93 40. Let's see if any of this sounds familiar. undersized guy who shows great hand movement and ability to separate as an interior lineman is going to be undervalued because of his size, but has tremendous quickness, is far more strong and a good point. If you're familiar with the team in the last 5 years, that's not one you, but it sure sounds like Geno Atkins to me. And that was the comparison I made right away, and it just screamed off the tape. And Geno's had his injury issues. Tremendous player. I mean, I remember watching his – I wrote a thing for Football Outsiders in his first preseason, and I don't have a perfect bad name, but that was easy. Watching Geno in his first preseason, I'm like, okay, this dude's going to be a monster. I think – in that defense and what Paul Gunther's done, which is somewhat similar to Mike Zimmer and somewhat not, Grady Jarrett projects as a second to third round guy, and it's one of those things where he reminds me so much of Geno Atkins, I was just compelled to mention it.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and the Bengals certainly looking to upgrade the defensive line after last year, struggling so much to get after the quarterback, a lot of that due to the ACL injury with Geno, but also, I mean, it's just one of those things where the depth of that rotation is really what fueled it under Mike Zimmer, and they really were lacking that last year. They tried to help out, and they think, Michael Johnson will help that. Pat Sims is a guy who you can plug in against the run, but if you're looking for the future, Domantopeko reaching the end of his career, a guy like Jarrett, if he was there with one of those picks in the third round in particular, I'm sure they would sprint up to the podium with that one.
The Bengals fans who are listening to this podcast, go to draftbreakdown.com and type in Grady Jarrett and just pull up a couple of his games, and you'll kind of laugh hilariously because you won't believe a guy that small can be that strong and that disruptive. And that's why Geno Atkins went in the fourth round, because people didn't think he could do what he does. And I see Jarrett as the same type of guy.
Yeah. It's funny, this is not on the same level, but I remember last year reading in Sports Illustrated, the one guy that kept drawing comparisons to Geno Atkins was Aaron Donald, and that worked out all right for the Rams.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's not bad at all. Yeah, same kind of thing. Approximately, I would say that Aaron Donald is not – Jarrett's a little quicker, and he's not quite as strong as Donald, because Donald would just move people. Jarrett is more, he'll throw a couple karate moves at you, and all of a sudden he's got a sack.
Yeah.
But I think his skills are definitely transferable to the NFL. He's just one of those under-the-radar guys that you look at and go, how come he's not like an early second-rounder? It's weird.
Right. Well, I know the Bengals certainly are home for that. Doug, I appreciate you coming in and joining me on the podcast. Once this all shakes out and you get a – did he give you vacation after the draft and just to kind of get the back off for a minute?
That's cute. That's really cute. Then we have to do all the reconnaissance and all the draft autopsies, and that goes all the way through. I think I get like 2 days off in June, and then I have to start looking at the 2020. You know how this is. There's never a day off. There's
I do. Unfortunately, I know all too well. Well, in knowing how busy we'll be, I'll have to call you for the some autopsy results whenever we finish up this thing and discuss how it went.
Happy to do so.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it. All right. Next up on our NFL Draft Extravaganza podcast, we're going to head over to Dane Brugler from the He's a senior NFL draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout and CBS Sports. And if you are interested in the draft and want to know what is going on when your team, the Bengals in particular, pick somebody, I cannot recommend more the NFL Draft Guide. This thing's 187 pages of player breakdowns. Dane, I'm sad for your time that you put. I can't imagine how long it took you put that whole thing together. Are you still recovering from that process?
Yeah. First thing I did was make sure I was still married. And it's really it's the last 10 months of my life just wrapped up into this PDF document. It's, we talk so much about the first and second round guys, but this guide really goes 400 prospects deep. It just tries to cover everyone that, the teams could be looking at. And so, if you get the guide and your team drafts the McNeese State offensive tackle in the seventh round, you can flip to the guide and find out exactly who your guy's getting.
How many backup thumb drives do you have of that PDF file just to make sure, in case your house floods and the office is struck by, like, to make sure that that thing is still intact and never possibly lost?
Yeah, no, that's something that I've learned. This is my I've been doing this for about 8, 9, 10 years now, and so it's something I've learned over the years that there's no such thing as backing it up too many times. So I definitely have quite a few of those.
Well, let's delve into something, some of the guys you have, some of the analysis you've done. I want to start with a position of particular interest to the Bengals, and that's sort of the depth of this receiver class position that they're looking to hit at, particularly guys that can play out of the slot and guys that can take the top off, something that Hugh Jackson has expressed a lot of interest in finding. On your draft guide, you had one guy higher than I've seen most places and one guy of particular interest that I know the Bengals have lower than most places. I'll start with the higher. You have Rashad Green, ace. What was it about Rashad Green from Florida State that you like so much?
Well, he was just the model of consistency for the Seminoles the last 3 or 4 seasons. You worry about the size a little bit. He's only 182 pounds. He's not a player that will ever carry more than 190 pounds. But he's just so savvy working in the middle of the field. I think he's if he goes to a team and goes to the slot, I think that's where he fits best. And he knows how to work the middle of the field. He can get open. He can create after the catch. And so he was really Jameis Winston's safety valve the last 2 years. And so I think Rashad Green might not get a lot of publicity, and he's not the biggest guy. But if he goes to the right situation where he can work out of the slot, I think he'll make a lot of money for himself and NFL for a long time.
On the flip side of that, all the way down to 19th on the receiver list, you had Tyler Lockett out of Kansas State. The Bengals have had interest. They sent James Irvin, their receivers coach, as well as Darren Simmons, special teams coordinator at Kansas State, for Pro Day. They've tracked him pretty closely. He seems to be a nice fit for some of the things that they want. They love the accomplished on-tape receiver type. What is it that kind of pushed him down the board for you?
Well, I think, you look at the size. He's under 5'10". He's only 182 pounds, he's not going to get much bigger than that at all. He has such a small catch radius, and that's something that you have to factor in. You saw it on tape, a lot of body catches, not the most natural hands catcher, but he does hold 17 school records at Kansas State, extremely accomplished, not only on offense, but also on special teams. He was an impact return man. And so I think he's a guy, if he goes to the right situation where he can be a number 3 or number 4 receiver, I think he can flourish in the right spot. But with that size and the fact that he will have his share of drops, I think that will hurt him. And that's why I'm not overly high on him. But at the same time, I still think he's early on day three, he's a guy I would target.
Yeah. Let's flip real quick to the top of the offensive line draft, particularly the tackles. Bengals looking for a tackle of the future, a guy that would have a year. I mean, anybody that comes to the Bengals would have a year, essentially barring injury, to develop behind Andre Smith and Andrew Whitworth, both in the last years of their deal. Under that pretense of a guy that could have a year to develop in this system, you have Anders Pete as your number 1 overall out of Stanford. T.J. Clemmings right there at number 2. Who has the highest upside if you're looking more at the big picture as far as left tackle prospects go?
I think if you're looking for the biggest upside of any of these tackles, you might go with D.J. Humphreys out of Florida, a player that played about 280 pounds this past year, and he actually received a go-back-to-school grade by the advisory committee. They changed it, so it's either a first-round grade, second-round grade, go back to school grade, and he received that third grade from the committee, but he still came out, and I think it's going to pay off for him, because I think there's a good chance we see him in the top 25 somewhere. He might have the best feet and lower body quickness of any of these offensive tackles. Now, he's still a work in progress. He has some dings on his resume with injuries, but with all that being said, I think he does have the most upside of this group. Anders Pete is a player that, he's my number 1 tackle. You see the mechanical flaws, you see some discipline issues, but he has a lot of things that you can't teach. And that's where I think coaches are really going to appreciate who he is as a prospect. He could ideally use a year to really come along and I think he'll take his lumps as a rookie. But by year two, I think Andres Pete will be the best tackle out of this group, a player who can be a left tackle in the NFL for a long time. Obviously, has the NFL bloodlines. His dad played in the NFL for a long time. I think he has his issues, but I think they're fixable, and I think once pro coaching kicks in, he'll be a starting left tackle for a long time for a franchise.
That will be a position the Bengals will be looking at, certainly weighing a lot of those guys you just mentioned at the end of their first round. But another position that they really need to take a peek at is tight end. And this isn't the best year to need a tight end, particularly if you need a high-end tight end. But the Bengals have a very specific niche need at tight end, where they have their receiving tight end in Tyler Eifert. They feel like they need the complementary offset of that, the guy who's far more of a blocking tight end, can obviously make you some catches, but focus on being an asset in their running game and really be able to knock people back as Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard run behind him. Under that look, when you're looking for a guy whose probably strength is blocking, and in understanding that you're probably looking late on day two, day three, a guy that I look at is Jeff Heuermann from Ohio State, who maybe fits that. Do you see that, or are there other guys that maybe fit that mold?
Yeah, I think Jeff Heuermann makes a lot of sense. And, you know, he only had 17 catches as a senior this past season for the Buckeyes. But I think I was really impressed by the way he came along with his blocking. Just a very athletic, tough kid who, he's very well-rounded. I don't think he's elite in any one area, but he's has the potential to be above average, across the board. He has that type of skill set and that type of potential. So Jeff Heuermann, a player that the stats don't jump out at you, but if you watch the tape, just so impressed. And with in Urban Meyer's offense, he was moved all over from the backfield, in line, even out of the slot. And he was asked to do a lot of blocking, and I think that really helped himself this year in terms of boosting his stock. And then the guy later on day three that I think might be of some interest is Nick Boyle out of Delaware. He ran in the fives in his 40-yard dash. Not the fastest guy. He can catch the ball, but he's not going to be a player that's going to create much as a receiver or a ball carrier. But he's a smash mouth, tough nose blocker. And I think if you can get him somewhere in the fifth, sixth round, I think he could pay dividends as a number two whose specialty is blocking.
Yeah, and that's interesting. One certainly to look. But I'll tell you what, when draft day comes and it does get down to that fifth and sixth day and you are dozing in and out of watching the last few days of the draft, you just wake up right before the Bengals pick, once they select, pull open the draft guide, go see what the analysis is on them. Highly recommend it. If you're listening to the podcast now, just make sure you go to the blog. We'll have all of the link to where you can go get that up. Dane, very much appreciate you joining me as you did last year as well, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you here soon in the future.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me.
All right, rounding out the last leg of our NFL draft spectacular podcast, we're bringing in Phil Savage, who's the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. See him on ESPN Insiders, on SiriusXM, and also Crimson Tide radio analyst, a former NFL GM, player personnel director, coach, scout, spent about 20 years in the NFL. But now, I mean, the Senior Bowl's kind of been your thing. But what's it been like kind of watching the Senior Bowl take off over, I mean, it really seems in recent years it's really taken off as one of the premier events of the draft season.
Yeah, Paul, I appreciate you saying that. And I came back to this area in Mobile. It's my hometown, actually, in June of 2012. And, you know, so far I feel like I've been able to bring a unique perspective. I was here as a six-year-old kid trying to get autographs many years ago to, you know, being a 40-year-old GM and trying to find players for the draft. But over the last several years, we've just tried to improve the entire week, not only for the players and the NFL clubs that come down to scout those players, but also to increase the opportunity for the media to get more exposure to the players and then, of course, the fans and the community. But we're excited about a long-time tradition called the Senior Bowl. We were able to secure Reese's as a sponsor 2 seasons ago, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's been, and it's been one of those where the players just keep running through, where every year you look at the top of the draft, and there's so many guys that came to the Senior Bowl, and a lot of them that made their names at the Senior Bowl. I want to start, as we kind of analyze players that the Bengals could be looking into here, one of them that you have seen a lot of through your time with Crimson Tide would be safety Landon Collins out of Alabama. The Bengals are, both their safeties are up after this season. There's lots of thoughts in them possibly looking into that area. Landon Collins, pretty much the only safety that you kind of see right now as a first-round draft pick. What are some of his NFL comparisons, and how do you see his fit as a guy at the next level?
Yeah, I really like Landon Collins. I enjoyed watching him play at Alabama. And I'll tell you a quick story. Of course, he came to Tuscaloosa as a 5-star recruit, very high profile. He chose Alabama while his mother said, no, I want you to go to LSU on national television. And despite that, he comes in and does not start right away. And so he had to earn his stripes on special teams. He was dominant as a punt team gunner on kickoff coverage. And I think he earned a lot of respect from the coaching staff and his teammates as he ultimately emerged about midway through his freshman year as a big-time talent. And, you know, he was my favorite player on the team the last 2 years because he's so explosive. He's a hitter. He's an intimidator in the run game, in the short area passing game. I know some people are a little concerned about his raw center field range ability from the middle of the field, but I saw him do it at different times for the Crimson Tide. That's probably the weakest element of his game, but he's got a lot of strength. And, you know, off the top of my head, when I think of Brian Dawkins back in the day with the Eagles, the ability to impact the run and passing games, to me that's what Landon Collins would fit. The Bengals picking at 21. If you would have told me during the season that he would make it to 21, I would have been all over. I do think that he slipped some as people have been a little more apprehensive about just that pure cover ability in the deep part of the field. But for my money and the fact that more teams are now playing 3 safety defenses to combat all these ultra-talented tight ends, that would be an excellent pick for Cincinnati.
Yeah, and it's one where if you look at what's become their Reggie Nelson mold position, where there's so much attacking that they have Reggie doing and coming off blitzes and moving up into the box when necessary. And when you have a guy like George Iloka, who's been so proficient in covering that backside, a guy like Collins sure could come in and make a pretty instant impact. And talking about this, I want to bring up something I loved that you wrote about on your Senior Bowl site, and that was the way teams evaluate, and there's this talk of, is he a first-round guy, second-round guy, that's not really the way that it should be viewed. You were talking about trying to reference guys in one of 5 categories as either a starter all-pro player, an eventual starter and a quality NFL player, a potential starter as a functional NFL player, a backup who just fills a roster, and a free agent who tends to be a camp body. When you were talking about how you came up with that method during times you were with Bill Belichick, how challenging is that for teams to figure out? And do you feel like when teams draft people, even in the 5th round, they feel like they view them, you know, their 5th round picks as starters? And how hard is it to make that kind of analysis and then gauge that against, okay, well, but when can we get him?
Yeah, I can remember over 20 years ago as I transitioned from coaching to scouting and being in our meetings with the original Browns, and Bill Belichick was the head coach at the time, and he looked at the room and said, look, guys, I don't need you to tell me what round somebody's going to be drafted. I need you to tell me what he's going to do when he gets here. And mm-hmm. I've always been very cognizant of evaluating players based upon what they will be and what they project to be in the NFL, rather than, okay, his value is in the first round, or he's going to be a fourth round pick. In most cases, the scouting staffs are divided up into area scouts, regional scouts, national scouts. So if you're a scout, for example, in the Southeast, you don't know what's available in the Pac-12 or the Big Ten. So for you to say a player is a second or third round pick, that's not really telling the leadership much. And the leadership between the general manager and the head coach, they're the ones that have to decide what the value is of a given player as it pertains to the draft board. But, you know, there's really a couple different schools of thought as you get into the third day of the draft, which is rounds 4 through 7. There are some teams that say, look, we only want to draft players that have starting caliber traits. In other words, guys that are going to come in, we can develop, and potentially they may end up being good enough to start, versus taking a player that you pretty much know what you're going to get. He's reached his ceiling as an athlete. He has some deficiency in play that's going to keep him from ever being a starter. You would, you know, grimace and clench your teeth if he had to be out on the field on a full-time basis. Those are all backups and guys that, you know, probably won't have long careers, but could fill in the back end of your roster. And so, you know, there were times during my NFL career where we said, look, let's roll the dice and see if we can develop this kind of player. And there were other times where we said, look, we do need a couple of special teams, meat and potato types that we're not really concerned about how they fit on the depth chart from an offensive or defensive standpoint. So, you know, there's 32 different ways to do it, but it is maddening to hear all of the pundits talk during the springtime about, well, he's a first rounder, he's a fifth rounder, whatever, when you're not really telling the fan, the audience, what something about the player and how he actually fits into the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Amongst those top two levels, if you talk starter or an eventual starter, the linebacker class, I mean, there's not, you're not hearing a lot of names mentioned really standing out towards the top of the draft, but how many linebackers do you think in this class would land in those top two categories?
Well, I think that when you look at, you have to really split the linebackers into two different groups. You've got your outside backer slash defensive ends, and, you know, there's a number of players that could go very high in the draft. Vic Beasley from Clemson, Randy Gregory from Nebraska, pending, you know, what people decide about the failed drug tests at Nebraska and then at the combine. I personally think he's really going to slip in this draft because of these issues, but, you know, Bud Dupree is a kind of a hybrid outside backer defensive end from Kentucky that some forecast is going potentially in the first round. So there's a good number of those type of athletes. And then at the inside backer post, you know, a lot of times people are trying to find that inside backer that can play more than just first down against the run. They're looking for the player that can stay on the field for all three downs, both against the run and the pass. And, you know, I think there's a collection of inside backers that are probably a little underrated in that regard, that are likely going to go in that bottom of the first, probably throughout the second round area of this draft, that all have a chance to start. You look at Eric Kendricks from UCLA, Denzel Perryman from Miami, Florida, Stephon Anthony from Clemson, who we had here at the Senior Bowl. Benardrick McKinney is a junior from Mississippi State. He's the biggest of all those Mikes. He's in that 6'3", 6'4", range, 255 pounds. Paul Dawson from TCU is another player that has potentially three-down ability. So I think there's going to be some real value in those box-type linebackers, guys that are going to be a real part of your defense and your special teams. And with that being said, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, a couple of those names I mentioned are likely, when they do the redraft, people will say, well, they should have been gone in the top 15 or top 20 because of how much value they bring to the table.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I want to talk about one guy who's local to the Cincinnati area and was at the Senior Bowl, maybe one of my favorite interviews and just stories that I was able to write while down there. And it was Quentin Rollins, cornerback out of Miami, who's he was a captain and leader on the basketball team for his career at Miami and switched over to football, and in 1 year was MAC Defensive Player of the Year, picking off all kinds of passes and had an interception in the Senior Bowl. This is one of those guys that every coach that wants to get the guy with all the raw ability and mold them in their own image once they get him would be a dream selection to get. What was your impression of Rollins, and how do you project him to the league? Because I've seen him listed as a safety in some spots. Some people still have him as a pure corner. What were your thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know, we were really struggling in terms of trying to find a number of corners to fill out our Senior Bowl roster because, you know, so many juniors came out a year ago, and we had a good group of corners in Mobile last January. And about mid-season, one of my scout friends said, hey, have you heard about the Miami of Ohio corner? He played basketball for 4 years. And I said, well, I'll check him out. Well, one of the former coaches at Alabama is now at Miami of Ohio. He endorsed him as soon as I reached out to him and said, hey, this guy's got NFL talent written all over him. So we invited Quentin Rollins. Of course, Miami, Ohio went 2-10 this year. They did not have a very good year, but he was a real standout. And I think when you watched his tapes, the fact that you could see some of those instinctual elements of his play transition from basketball to football and then see where he was in Mobile during the week playing for the Tennessee Titans and going through all the drills and then where he progressed to at the combine and then ultimately his pro day and all these individual workouts. I think people are very interested in knowing that he has quite a bit of upside. Now, the one question mark on him is just the pure raw speed. He ran in the 4.55 range thereabouts, which is on the high end of, you know, questionable speed for these pro scouts. But this is a player that can play outside. He can play inside. He's got very good ball skills, and he's got a real good feel for the game. So I think you'll probably hear his name called on Friday night, the second day of the draft. I don't think he has run fast enough to get into the first round, but I think he'll make somebody a good player in that second or third round as a potential starter and maybe a nickel right away as a rookie.
Yeah, I've found him a really interesting piece in regards to the Bengals draft. I mean, if he was still there in the third round, it would be a no-brainer for a team that has that fifth cornerback spot open and a number of guys that are up on contracts, almost all of their top corners. Adam Jones' contract up, Darquez Denard contract up, Trey Kirkpatrick's contract is up, Leon Hall's contract is up. Everybody's got, they've got a lot of reforming to do. They're going to need to make a hole probably. Rollins, I think, a really interesting guy for the Bengals to keep an eye on.
One other thing I was going to say about it, too, is this corner class with some of the juniors that elected to come out, P.J. Williams from Florida State, Marcus Peters from Washington, most notably, those guys have some character concerns off of the field. And with that being said, when Quentin Rollins has proven to be a very reliable, dependable teammate in basketball and then makes this transition to football, his stock probably rises some while some of these other guys, people are not quite as trusting and ready to pull the trigger on. So that's why I just think people are going to be all over Quentin Rollins in that second round area.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with you. One last topic I want to hit on real quick while I've got you here is the 4-3 defensive tackles, the prototype. You know, he's a lot of projections because, you know, half the league's playing the 3-4, and there's a lot of wondering, okay, how do people fit in certain systems? As far as 4-3 defensive tackles, maybe in the early second, in the second or mid-rounds there, day two, guys like Michael Bennett, Carl Davis, Jordan Phillips, who do you think is at the high end of this class people are not thinking enough about? That can plug in and be an immediate impact type of player
from the defensive tackle position, particularly in the 4-3.
Well, of course, Carl Davis from Iowa had somewhat of a substandard senior year, but he showed up here in Mobile at the Reese's Senior Bowl and put on an absolute show. He was dominant in practice. He played well in the game. And, you know, if he doesn't go in the, within the top 32 picks, I think he'll easily go somewhere in that second round. But he certainly is a starting caliber a defensive tackle. You mentioned Grady Jarrett from Clemson. Now, he is more of your classic penetrator as a three technique. He's shorter in stature, but he plays with a high motor, and it seems like he's gained some momentum maybe this spring after the coaches have gotten involved in the evaluation process. And then you mentioned Michael Bennett, and, of course, you know, he was banged up toward the end of the year with Ohio State. He was unable to participate with us here in Mobile, and then I think he missed, if not all of the combine, at least parts of it because he was not 100% yet. But he's flying under the radar as somebody that would fit in the 4-3 and would likely get on the field, you know, early in his career. A couple of other names I would mention to you, you know, Marcus Hardison from Arizona State just emerged this year as a senior. He's more of a, I think he's a player that can really fit either scheme as a 3-4 end or perhaps as a 4-3 defensive tackle. But he garnered some attention while he was here in Mobile. And then how about Joey Embu from Houston? Now, he did not test well at the combine in terms of jumping and a 40-yard dash, but he is a powerful player, and I think he's got quite a bit of upside. So he's more of a developmental type of project. But he's a guy that would definitely help down the road in the run game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Phil, I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to share some of your wealth of knowledge that you've been able to gather. I'm sure that we will be seeing plenty of you all over the radio airwaves, television, pretty much everywhere through the draft and a little bit.
Well, good deal, Paul. I appreciate the time, and thank you for coming down to the Reese's Senior Bowl. You're always welcome here, and hopefully you got enough information to carry you through the spring. But, yeah, this is the calm before the storm for me. After this weekend, I will have something going on almost every day prior to the draft.
Yeah, well, best of luck to you. Make sure you sneak some sleep in there and have a good one.
All right, that wraps it up. I have to say, that was incredibly informative stuff. It was so awesome to talk to these guys. A lot of really, really great insight into players that the Bengals are going to be looking at and that you're going to need to know much more about as the draft gets closer here. Again, huge thanks to Doug Farrar, Sports Illustrated, Dane Brugler from CBS NFL Draft Scout, and Phil Savage from the Reese's Senior Bowl, Sirius XM, everything that he does. I mean, just great guests. So great talking to them. Loved hearing Doug Farrar talking about Grady Jarrett as the Geno Atkins clone. Be interesting to see where he falls and if he's around, because if he's still sitting there in that third round and they're looking at the possibility of a Geno Atkins clone, there will be a whole lot of push inside the Bengals organization to make that happen. I can absolutely guarantee it. Love talking to Dane Brugler about Jeff Heuermann from Ohio State. He certainly feels like an ideal fit of the type of guy the Bengals would be looking for, and his local ties don't hurt him. That always goes over well in the front offices, those that have the nice offices at PBS. Love the local guys, particularly a guy like that. And, of course, Phil Savage, who had really, really interesting things to say about a number of guys. His Landon Collins insight was fantastic. I thought what stuck out to me, dominant punt team gunner, and that he was. That's a guy who could fill it, and that's an immediate impact this year. I mean, you saw the impact that Darquez Dennard had in that role, stepping in last year, and the Bengals love easing those guys in where they can play a significant role on special teams and then move in after that into more of a regular starter. If Landon Collins was the Bengals guy in the first round, it would be almost an exact replica of what Dennard was in that point. So really interesting stuff from all those guys. Great to hear from them. And as I mentioned before, keep an eye out for all the rest of our coverage. they'll have more of these pods coming. Of course, we'll absolutely have another one before the draft starts as we get really close, and then post-draft for the autopsy of everything that went right, wrong, or indifferent. And so we'll have all that for you here. And I'm excited the next time I do this, it won't just be me talking to myself. I'll have Jim Ossarski here with me, and we'll be able to keep you even further in depth to everything that we're going to have cover coverage. Now, of course, as you know, I have to go out with a song, as we always do here on Scribe Session. And, you know, as we keep running down names and have analysis of what these guys can do, and these players, 300 draft prospects to go through, all these things, there's only one thing I can think of, and I can think of the Who. Who are you? We really want to know. We really want to know. So I'm going to go out. Thank you for listening. New Scribe Sessions and Beyond the Stripes, which will come out as on video, obviously, in our live show. But we're probably going to have that as a podcast for you. All that stuff coming up. But for now, Pete Townsend and the Who coming at you. Who are you? Have a good one, everybody. Mm-hmm.